stop saying stupid things too.
All right, it's 5:08, so I guess we can get started.
We'll cruise through today. Hopefully, you will have a chance to scroll through the PDF sent you from the council meeting last month. So we'll touch on a few of these things today. Start with minutes and kind of go from there.
So is everybody?
I move that we approve the minutes.
All right, very good. I'll second it.
Even though it's been a while.
Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So I printed this off. This was part of the city council meeting that I presented at, but just to give you an idea of where our revenues expenses were for last fiscal year, this is the unaudited numbers, but it'll ultimately be pretty close to these financial numbers. So,
Tyler, can I remember for a second about the minutes? I mean, I did read through them. They're awfully detailed. You know, most attorneys today say don't write detailed minutes because that gets you into trouble.
Because someone might hold you to them. Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, you get into very small things that don't seem to mean much when you're talking now, but it can mean something to somebody else. So I don't know what the city's method is, but, you know, it looks like somebody's transcribing almost the whole recording. I mean,
yeah, we can do less detailed minutes for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest that because every place I've been, I mean, they suggest don't.
I don't want to get sued for something I said here.
I know. Okay.
So you don't want to defend me.
You're protected.
I got your back, Corey. Whatever
you're
you
protected.
Say,
you're protected.
I can make it sound sweet and perfect.
So the top little section there gives you golf course revenue. So that's going to be green fees, driving range, punch passes. Golf course rentals are going to be cart fees, pro shop sales, event center rentals, more of the leased rental equipment. So if you look at that, those two, total golf course revenue and total golf course rental, get us pretty close to that 2.4, and then some non-operating revenues there. And the second page is mostly going to be expenses, and then expenses continue there with the cafe on that third page. The big number I look at, and the one that I think the city is most interested in, is that net revenue over expenditures, the very bottom. So basically our revenue minus our expenses there. So we ended up pretty good fiscal year, almost $200,000, which was a good year. I think we could have been better, had less expenses on a few things, especially with the construction project, having to buy ancillary things like trash cans and silly stuff that you wouldn't normally have to buy every year. So this year my expectation is for us to have revenues up and then expenses at or lower than what we were at this previous fiscal year. So we're on track for that. Revenues have been up, which I'll get into on the next one. One cause for, and I'm keeping a close eye on, is going to be wages for employees, our temporary time, especially in the grill. Make sure we're show a profit there with our operations in the grill, especially through the winter. Trying to make sure we're not overexpending with employees with not much revenue coming in. So I had it on our agenda today, and I'll touch on it there with kitchen staffing. Our initial thought with bringing Justin on was we'll see how the summer, fall go, and then address maybe the potential need for another full-time employee. I personally don't think we've shown that there's a huge need for that quite yet, so which I've talked to Justin about, is I'll push for us to survive through the winter with part-time and seasonal help, and then take another good look, reevaluation with the need there, and then the potential with Gateway Parks of having a more 9-to-9 operation with the grill in conjunction with that operation on the sledding too. So we'll get into that too, but I am keeping an eye on those. So.
What is the thought with the cafe over the winter? I mean, obviously golf is going to drop off. I mean, one of the things we talked about way back was, you know, utilizing the community, having something Friday night, something Saturday night.
Yeah.
I mean, those things can work really well because you do them on a prepaid basis, so you know how many meals you need.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not at risk or anything. You know exactly how much staff you have to have there and so forth.
So our tentative plan that Justin and I have talked about, we're going to finalize it more on Friday, is having Thursday, Friday, Saturday open for lunch and dinner, and then Sunday brunch, and then doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday kind of pre-made, prefix, pre-sell, family-to-go meals that they can take and bake or take and eat type meals. So we're going to do a combination of those. He still wants to do some of his fine dining, higher-priced meals, which another Friday discussion on costs there and revenues and operations with that. But
when he does that, is he in the event center or is he just in a little area out in front of
it? We have done them on the patio, but with the weather, we're kind of moving it inside and we'll kind of doll up the grill eating area a little more.
Because there's not that much space in there.
We'll have to clear out some tables and...
But you don't want to tap the event center either. I guess if you knew you weren't going to have an event.
Yeah, we did try one of those fine dinings in there. It was almost...
The feedback was it was too big.
There's too much space.
Right.
It's not intimate enough for those that are joining it. So we're going to kind of use the space we have and three or four tables out. And
I think it's great.
So.
How is he going to support the simulator activity with food and beverage?
So we have leagues. We've started sign-ups for it. We'll have leagues Monday, Friday, and Saturday mornings. So Monday all day. The cafe, someone will be there to sell items. And then we'll have more special stuff for during the simulator league times. And along with those league times, we'll do daily fee rentals. I've kind of positioned Alan and Brent to have them work more during the winter times so they can operate some of those. We do have a couple part-time employee on the golf side to run those leagues, so we'll have an employee there kind of assist with some of the ordering and delivery and cooking.
What's been the pre-book on the simulator for the winter? Does it look good?
Or? More than we did last year. I've got 10 or 11 memberships sold so far. And we'll have, I think, once we start to get really, really bad weather, we'll get an influx there on more memberships. So,
how about membership pricing? Is it going up a little bit or staying the same?
We reduced it to be a little more competitive with the two others in town.
So yeah, did I see one just down here?
Yeah, there's one by Domino's.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple in Bountiful, Centerville. Private Fairways is a popular one in Bountiful.
Yeah.
The facilities aren't as nice as ours, so...
Shame on them.
Yeah. They do have the advantage of not being on the hill.
Why is that an advantage? I mean,
it's probably somewhere centrally located. Snow and getting up the hill, but
that's never a problem.
Well, I know.
I've lived there for 10 years. Right. It's never been a problem.
Yeah.
Do you have an advertising and promotion campaign for the simulators ready to go prior to the winter? It doesn't seem like I'm still running into a lot of people that don't realize Eaglewood has simulators.
If you're on our 18,000 person email list, you've already gotten two. So if you're not on there, I'm running some digital ads on Instagram, but other than that, I haven't posted anything.
I must not be on your email list because I haven't seen anything.
Might not. Might be going to your spam. You might have deleted it too many times.
No. I check my junk folder every morning.
Seriously? I sent out a couple big emails. So.
Just in case.
I mean, at any point are we going to do any walk-in, like hourly? Rent?
Yeah, that'll be part of those times. That's where I'll have employees there to be able to take those times and be there for people. The difficulty is if we don't have an employee there, it's hard for us to sell the daily fee.
Yeah.
So we'll have some scheduling and days and times when those are available. And I've kind of sent those out with that membership is that they're knowing that, okay, Monday, Friday, Saturday mornings will be league times and daily play. And then if there aren't filled, then we'll open up for memberships to book times.
Just a quick question on this. So am I reading this correctly when I see that they're actually charging, so there's $100,000 in principal reduction and $93,000 in interest that's been being charged to you? So this is
after... Are you on the first page?
I'm on the last page.
Oh, last page.
And I'm just up from the net revenue over expenditures, the 197. So it's literally after all expenses, including.
Yeah, one reason we talked about is the bond proceeds today has created some interest revenue for the golf course, some of the money we haven't spent. And then our cash sitting in the bank that's accrued a little bit of interest.
So that's interest income?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't, yeah, I, that would be over here on the income side. But anyway, okay. Well, hey, it wasn't that long ago we were looking at big negatives.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your perception now that you've, now that the restaurant's been up and running? Can you just provide an executive summary of the performance of the restaurant? Is it, are you pleased with the first year, which was?
Revenue-wise, yes. I think we spent too much money. I think we have some kinks to work out with the menu and pricing. Overall, not just with the day-to-day grill, but catering and events as well. So some of the things we're going to work out hopefully this winter to be on par with, I think, where the golf course is headed. So.
It's a tough science, but what about the staffing part? Seemed like, so, you know, I drop in occasionally. Seems like that there are a lot of people standing around doing nothing for a long time, and then there was a particular highway patrol tournament where I felt like it was really understaffed. So
yeah, so one of the, yeah, we could speak to that. I think that there is a, it's better to be overstaffed certain times, but Justin, I think, is learning when the golf course is busy.
Mm-hmm.
So from 10 to 2, you need two people there, one to cook and one to take orders. We've had a lot of overlap in the afternoon evenings with, you know, for today, for example, with the weather, that we sent one girl home because there was nothing for her to do. And
sure, yeah.
So just small things like that, that when Justin's not there, whoever is there needs to take a little bit of accountability and
yeah,
know
yeah.
what to do when. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, that's one of my hot ticket items is wages and what we're spending on employees. So.
How many seasonal employees, quote unquote, does he have in the
so
restaurant?
We have Lucas is still on for a seasonal cook. He'll be coming off here probably mid-November, and then we have two new seasonal winter cooks, Andy and Byerly, they'll be on through probably mid-April. And then we have a few beverage cart gals that will be seasonal as well. So I've got our three event center coordinators that are gonna kind of step in and help a lot with events. So they have their, I had them get their food handlers permit and alcohol service, so they'll be able to assist more with the events. I think that's where we'll have some struggles there getting staffing to run some of the events on the event center.
So is the grill open during the winter?
Yeah.
Like every day or?
No, food-wise, probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
okay.
Lunch and dinner. So, and then, like I said, probably some pre-sale ticket to go. And we're going to do a Thanksgiving turkey dinner to go, so we're going to pre-sell 30 Thanksgiving meals. It'll
be
turkey, potatoes, rolls, like a green bean casserole, like you name it.
And grab it.
Yeah, pay for it. We'll have times for them to come pick up. And then we're going to kind of do the same thing around Easter. But we'll do some more of that type of stuff that we know how much to make. We know the staffing we need to make it, and then pre-sell them.
Did you mention a Sunday brunch also?
Yeah, we're going to try it. Hopefully once we get our banquet license, which should be November, it'll be interesting to see how that does. I think our biggest obstacle is our main customer base is golfers, and golfers aren't coming in December, so we'll see what we can get with the Salt Lake crowd and the Eaglewood.
I think if properly promoted and people know about it, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah,
Well, I think you have enough people up around the golf course who would come to something like a Sunday brunch. You know, if it's promoted, and the trouble you're going to run into is if you can't use the banquet facility, you're not going to have very many tables. You know, but I mean, these brunches anymore, I've gone to the one at Snow Basin, and...
Oh, they're fabulous, yeah.
I mean, and, you know, you can hardly get a reservation there, and it's $70 a person, and...
And nobody minds paying it, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Snowbird does them, you know, a bunch of...
Deer Valley does two or three different ones.
Yeah, so, and Stein Erickson, I mean, that's probably the best of them all, but...
But now that there's not really a published newsletter that comes with your city utility bills, how do you promote it to non-golfers? How can the word get out?
Well, there's a newsletter. It's just electronic. You know, sign up for it. So that's maybe not as good. I think signage up there, if you're trying to get the neighborhood to come to Sunday brunch, signage on the property, on the corner, on the corners, is always good.
Is it taboo to include a flyer with everybody's utility bills?
Well, not necessarily. We just haven't done that. We could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be money very well spent to really reach your core.
Yeah.
Of everybody. I mean, let everybody know that the golf course is open, or the grill at the golf course is open during the winter. I mean, that's a great idea, Sunday brunch. I mean,
we're doing a breakfast with Santa too. I've already paid for the Santa on the 23rd of December. So if you have some grandkids, or we're going to do some.
There we go.
A breakfast picture with Santa. And
but maybe, yeah, you know, maybe we need to think about signage for the folks who live up there.
Right, and the other thing, I mean, the newsletter now that it goes out electronic, does that cover every house in the... People have to sign up for it, so how many actually get sent out?
About 25% of the city.
Okay, so then you need signage.
I'll have to sign up for that. I didn't know there was an electronic...
If you just go to the website, you can sign up.
When it used to come printed, you know, in your bill, I mean, that was...
It's been a complaint, you know, but it was costing us $4,000 or $5,000 a month to send a newsletter.
Yeah.
So,
more and more get used to it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you cut out paper, people complain for 6 months and then pretty
we
soon.
We don't
get
complaints anymore, but
yeah.
But I do get the comment Rogers has made, which is it's too bad we don't have a newsletter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because people don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't avoid seeing the newsletter. I mean, it was good. But if it costs that much, I would be in agreement. It's not worth
it. You know, repetitive content once a month.
Yeah.
Paper newsletters are just too expensive.
But I'll bet you could do like an 8.5 by 11 flyer in it for what, 10 cents a flyer at the most, maybe less.
Yeah, depending on if we're paying for postage.
A couple thousand dollars, we could do a golf course promotion in the newsletter in the utility bill for sure.
Yeah.
How many North Salt Lake residents are there?
Our population is about 24,000, but we have about 6,500 bills that go out.
5,500 households.
6,500 bills. We also have several that don't get paper bills. You can opt out of the paper bill. That's probably about 10% of the city that's opted out. So you could reach most of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it would. If sticking the utility bill would only be the cost of a flyer and whatever it costs.
It costs a couple thousand dollars once a year or twice a year. That's a good investment.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, it demonstrates to the rest of the North Salt Lake residents that the facility up there is not reserved solely for golfers.
Right.
It shows that it's being used for other purposes, which to a lot of people is important. Don't you occasionally take some criticism on that?
Yeah.
Lisa has requested to join via Zoom. Are you okay if I get it started?
Yep.
I don't know when she'll join, but she's been sent the link.
Just FYI, I need to leave by 6:15.
Okay. Yeah, we'll...
We'll
cruise.
I have a dinner appointment at 6:30, so...
Okay.
Actually, I could stay till 6:20.
So with a lot of that, I mean, I'll be doing a lot of Facebook and Instagram advertisements that I think are dollar per person a good way for exposure and signups. I mean,
I'd love to get 100% of the people that live in North Salt Lake to join our events, but that's just not going to be, that's not going to be the case. I mean, we're going to probably pull 70-80% of the functions we have from Salt Lake and other Davis County residents. So that my main focus is going to be with the 10-15 mile radius with how we're getting to these other events.
A lot of your older demographics just don't consult Instagram very often, like maybe twice a year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm posting on Facebook, and we'll look at doing a newsletter, but I would say from a personal, it's going to be I'm going to have a better outreach dollar-wise on social media than I am doing flyers. So
that world's dead.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you're leveraging him, the turkey dinner. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think those would be good. I pre-signed up.
I was going to say, I think it's...
Is there a pre-sign-up sheet for the turkey dinner?
Yeah, I'm on it, so...
I'm going to tell you, my wife's going to like that.
So is it just Thanksgiving Day, or is it...
I think we're going to do deliveries on the, 24th, that Tuesday and Wednesday before.
Okay.
So...
But not the weekend before or anything.
We talked about doing a ham one for Christmas, so we may do something like that.
I'll bet you sell more than 30. I'll bet this, anyway, if the word gets out, I think this could be really hot.
Our issue is going to be space and storage, because we're going to brine these turkeys, and then we've got to smoke them on the smoker. So it's really going to be space is going to be our limiting factor.
I'm talking to my wife. I might want on that list.
See?
My wife might want us on the list.
So I had last year, we just bought some from Gourmandise down in Salt Lake, and it was... best. I didn't have to clean up. I didn't have to cook anything.
Yeah.
So.
That's great.
I don't know if I'll ever cook Thanksgiving dinner again.
Oh, interesting.
It's giving you a hard time, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Because Tyler said in the sand that it's okay.
Tell her sorry.
Okay. Do you have any more tournaments or outings scheduled for the rest of this calendar year?
We do. We have one tomorrow, probably our biggest one of the year. Then we have another one on the Monday, and then the 28th.
Tomorrow is the biggest one of the year?
Yeah, they were originally scheduled in September, but they had a conflict that day, so they had to move. So they're generally end of September. But they're a $20,000 merchandise day and then a $10,000 golf day. So,
well,
that'd be a good day. And then food, another $9,000 in food. So they're a $40,000 event.
So, wow. And that's rain or shine, isn't it?
Yeah. And it looks like the weather's kind of backing off. It was supposed to rain till like 3, but now it's like 11:30-ish. So
that's it.
Fingers crossed.
Do you want to share that? There you go.
I just think it's worth noting that that 200 grand is after 225,000 of depreciation. And depreciation's a non-cash item.
Yeah.
So that means this thing's
spinning off $450,000.
Yeah. Yeah, we made some good money last
year. Dude, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's $800,000 better than where we were.
That's
like $900,000 less than that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Plus, like you said, you got to remember that it was a big expenditure year for various things associated with the remodel and everything else. So, in future years, expenditures will probably tail off a little bit.
We probably spent $15,000 on storage and equipment, utensils, and
stuff that's going to go away going forward.
Yeah, that we won't have this year. So. It was a big
point out. You put the depreciation, take the depreciation out.
Oh yeah,
and it goes to 450, 425.
Okay,
and cash
when
flow.
She
yes.
Joins,
so I'm telling people we made half a million.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
for some reason,
I'm
trying
to. It's good.
Yeah.
If
we
get
up
the
top one.
The simulators up and get
the
grill
up.
I mean,
I think
the grill could make $4 or $5 million.
$4 or $5 million.
Yeah,
if it were it
really.
My room helps me.
You know, established like
thanks,
Roger was saying.
Thank you, sorry.
People around
that's good.
Who live around there don't
don't really even know that, I mean, like, who knows it's going to be open over the winter?
So just a side note on signage, I and I'll maybe, this could maybe a good construction item, the golf course putting forth the money to have a digital signage board on the corner. Internally, we've talked about a little bit with Linda and I, and we have the big tall signs now that have the city events on it. Mm-hmm. But having a digital signage board that we can rotate things through on the corner, like we do on the golf course side, but have it there. The city can post functions on, and the golf course can put some. You know, I got a preliminary cost. It was about a little under $30,000.
Well, that's a city expense. That's not your expense.
So you mean similar to the one down on the roundabout on
more like ours and on the golf course.
Oh, okay.
So a little
you're
going
to advertise on that. You're trying to. It's about building community relations.
So maybe I'll push a little bit more on that to help with the community signage and notification.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want to be a little careful. You don't want to be too, what would you say, too commercial.
Yeah. Okay, so to give you an idea of where we're at July through September, I just did a comparison the last 5 years on the graft and then gave you an idea on our key figures revenue-wise, and then the projected numbers in red are what we've done so far, July, September, and then I took last year's October through June to give you where that revenue would be. But our rounds are up over last year, up overall the last 5 years, and then our revenue is up quite a bit.
The revenue's not up as much as the rounds are up. Why is that?
So that's not the right number. This should be that number. Sorry.
And actually, again, remember this winter we had snow on the course way longer than last winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. This spring.
This was a tough spring. We were loaded with.
Yeah. Well, and this is just July through September.
Oh, okay.
So July, August, okay. September, we've done almost 33,000 rounds, and then the $1.4 million.
So this is just this fiscal year, the new fiscal year.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The new fiscal year, July through September, compared to
not the calendar
to last. Yeah.
It's still.
So we're up like quite a bit. You know, 400,000, a little over 400,000 over last year. I don't know why I didn't input that number there.
And one of the big reasons is the success of the event center, is it not?
Yeah. So. That's 324,000. That is event center, food and beverage. If you do remember, this number does include our event center revenue, and we had minimal revenue from IOMB and stuff last fall. So, you know, the extra $280,000 we've done in revenue from the grill side is in here. We've done just about 100 in event, not quite 100 in event center revenue.
Looking beyond the numbers, and I'll ask you this too, Ken. I mean, the transition from a loser to a big winner on the event center has been a fabulous story, right?
Well,
does the city feel good about it?
I think I would agree with Tyler that you know, we're not really done making some significant changes in the grill, which I think is our weakest piece right now.
And what is the grill?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's the first year. We're, you know, giving Justin a chance to go through a season so he can get a better feel for his staffing levels, the staffing levels that he needs. We don't want him understaffed. We don't want him overstaffed. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that it's taking us a little bit longer to figure out the grill operation.
I mean, in the event center, what's our percentage of utilization? I mean, how many days a year do we have one event in the center?
So from April until now, the event center's been pretty good utilization. I mean, we've had either a tournament or an event. October's been slower, where we have Friday, Saturday events, but then we don't have as many tournaments during the week, and I just don't think events are looking for midday, midweek events.
But we're filling up in the winter on the weekends.
Yeah, we've had quite a few dates booked, even in December, early December, which is traditionally a slower time.
So what's our staffing there now? I mean, we brought somebody from the city, right, to really?
The event center side?
Yeah.
So it's me and I've got three part-time employees.
Three part-time employees.
Yeah.
So if somebody calls in for, you know, they're interested, who do they contact?
So it's Angie and I right now. I'm looking at hiring another kind of event coordinator. So
we
if anybody has anybody in mind.
Resigned. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because
yeah,
I thought we had a city person,
yeah, she,
right?
She, we did, but.
She resigned?
Yeah.
Oh. Where did she go? Just.
I don't know. I don't think it was. She just.
Tyler put her under too much stress to perform.
So, sorry, Tyler. I didn't.
No, it's okay. I know she does real estate. I know she's been talking about doing something else, so I'm not
so
sure what
right
she's doing.
So, right now we're trying to decide who to hire.
Yeah.
Right?
I think this is it's probably the only good time in the winter that can happen because I'm a little bit slower on phone calls until really after Christmas. But 1st of January, mid-February, we're going to be inundated. So we're going to do some open houses and bridal fair type showings.
I mean, we're going to try to get somebody with experience that, you know, I mean.
That's my hope.
There's so much potential there that, you know, we have a little bit of a margin, so even we had to eat a little bit for a while. But if somebody can come and bring some clients with them, you know, and has experience now someplace in the valley here, I mean, to me that thing would just jump right up because it's, you know, in that industry it seems like people have contacts and people go back to the same people even when they're with a different company and they go to wherever they're working at the current time, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's one of those jobs where you need a real personable person, the kind of person that's a really good, you know,
my whole
easy sell salesperson.
Ken and I talked about it last week, is finding an event planner or an event coordinator that's their current position that
mm-hmm.
is looking for something different would be ideal. So they kind of know that structure and how to book events and how they're getting people in there and answering questions.
Yeah.
I think that experience is important, but the other thing we've talked about is hiring a person who has done wedding planning and wedding events and things could also help us to know if our assumptions have been correct on the way the event center looks. Does it need more furnishings? Does
yes.
it need less
mm-hmm.
furnishings? Does it need
yeah.
window treatments that we don't have? Does it need different furniture? You know, what are ways we can enhance the experience to make it even better? Because we think it's great. But I'm not a wedding
yeah.
person.
Well, one thing that I think we're missing is an outside gazebo.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe.
I go to different hotels,
yeah.
and I mean, every one of them has
an
outside there.
That's a photo op situation.
Yeah, because,
yeah.
I mean, it's nice that we had the background, but taking it off the deck doesn't really work. People like to be on the ground and, you know,
yeah.
how the gazebos look. I mean, they just give it that thing.
Yeah.
And people like that. So having somebody with real experience
would
be good
tell
because
us.
They know what.
Sure.
What people want, you know.
Yeah, that's.
And
I
it would
think
take some pressure off of you because, I mean, then you got somebody else who's thinking on this stuff. And, I mean, it's very difficult. But, I mean, I see these hotels and all, which are places that I wouldn't think would be booked that much, really booked to the gills anymore. So,
yeah.
you know.
Grand America has like four gazebos in their courtyards and things all.
Well, I even
so
forgot about theirs.
Yeah,
yeah.
They can have up to like four weddings at,
yep.
at one time.
And they
time.
Do a lot of weddings.
And they do a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea on, I just want to jump to projected, then we'll kind of skip ahead here. So green fees, our budget's about $1 million, so I project us being over there. Cart fees, about $500,000 to last year, so we'll be over there. Driving range, I think we made 100 and 107 previous year, so we'll be up well over that driving range. And then merchandise, we've made about 305. So every kind of key figure on the golf side is up a pretty good percentage over last year. So if we can have a good October and a good November and then a shortened winter, which to me means 1st of April would be ideal for the golf course operations.
Was the city hurt by Highland Equipment not delivering the carts on time and not having GPS and that? How did that all work out? I mean, you don't have to elaborate too much on it. But Did that finally work itself out in the wash or not really?
I think overall, having the construction of the building and then old carts didn't impact us as much as I thought it would, especially looking at the revenue. I thought we would have a lot more negativity. We did have some, but more or less it was pointed towards the cafe not being open than anything else on the operation side. That was our biggest complaint last year, was not having, you know, other than drinks and snacks to buy. So, you know, Highland, although they, I think, failed on a lot of aspects of what they promised, they ultimately got us what we needed, although it was late.
Just took a lot more time.
Yeah. I'm more disappointed in their recommendations for the GPS units and that relationship that they kind of promised was good that ended up not being good.
Yeah.
So.
GPS is nice, though, on the blind holes where you can see,
yeah, you can see the
cars moved away from the green without having to drive all the way up there and then go back. And
that is really great. I've used them, too.
Yeah, that's almost priceless. Yeah, that's a great thing. But there was no negative impact revenue-wise, right?
No.
Because you always had enough carts. I mean, Highland did bring down some carts, like from other facilities, right, or whatever.
Yeah, so what advantage I think we had last year before we got them is we'd already upped the cart prices. Mm-hmm. So we were, even though we didn't have new carts, we were still charging the $10 fee on the old carts.
And you didn't receive a lot of pushback about that. Yeah,
no.
That's good. I mean,
we're very competitive on our prices because a lot of golf courses have raised their prices. So, you know, I mean, we're in the top tier, but we're nowhere near the top.
Yeah. And I think, so us going from 58 to 60 next year still puts us not the highest, but kind of top four, top five
in
the area.
Park City's 60, which, you know, for a resort place, I mean, I've always been surprised how cheap they are up there.
Yeah.
But, and then Mountain Dell is what, 62?
Yeah, they'll be, they were 60 this year. I think they're going up too.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, when you play those courses, I mean, our courses just as nice, if not nicer, and probably more convenient to a lot of people than going up.
I'd say nicer, yeah.
And I maybe I'll give a report on it maybe November, December, but all the dynamic pricing that we've run for the last 4 or 5 months have been awesome. And we were charging some groups on the weekend $61, $62 per person with no pushback or comments.
Yeah, there was really no negative comment on that, was there?
And next year it's going to be, you know, our rack rate 60, it's going to be $63, $64, maybe even $65 on peak times, which people paid. I mean,
it's cheap.
It is cheap. I mean, really.
Well, demand is high right now. Demand is at peak right now.
Let's see how we're doing for time here.
Sorry.
So I wanted to jump into maybe discussion on email I sent a few weeks ago on full-time instructor. I've had quite a few conversations with some PGA hiring professionals, as well as those that are in with the teaching and coaching with the, not just the section, but nationally. Mm-hmm. With some, hi, Lisa.
Hi.
So hey, with some feedback from them, I'm kind of back and forth, and this may be, there's pros and cons, I think, to both. To having them be a part-time employee versus having them be an independent contractor. I think having them as a part-time employee gives us a little more control on having them come and meet with other instructors, meeting with staff, having them being part of more of the team. There's an expense there with having them be there, but then having them an independent contractor kind of leaves them on their own devices to be able to still function within the golf course, but not be quite as much of a team member as I would like him to be. So I've kind of gone back and forth on that. I think my recommendation would be to have them still be a part-time employee, so they have a little bit more of camaraderie and work with the other employees and be part of Eagle.
You want to control it.
Yeah.
You want to control it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't want them to be a completely independent contractor.
You want to control
that.
And that came from one of the national guys I had a Zoom meeting with, telling me that there's a little bit of a conflict in having them work in the pro shop and then teaching, and you should do an independent contractor, and then that got my head spinning. But I kind of landed back on the part-time employee recommendation.
For the same reason you've taken the restaurant in-house, you want to teacher.
You have more administrative control if they're part of the team, and even if they're a part-time employee. If they're a completely independent contractor, you can have some friction where your independent contractor is actually competing with the rest of your PGA professional staff, and that can be bad.
Yeah, that's.
So ultimately, I'd have that professional kind of be overseeing our teaching and coaching, so working with Alan on some of our PGA Junior League camps, PGA Family, a lot of the ancillary programs that the PGA puts together that I think ultimately help Eaglewood. So.
Yeah, it's important to keep Alan and, to some extent, Brent and, you know, involved in teaching when they can. Otherwise, they'll get burned out a lot quicker.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a middle ground that I think we can find with Alan and Brent to make them feel good about being able to teach some, but not too much. I guess I said in my email, I think right now, especially for Alan, he's a little bit overworked.
Yeah.
Not because I'm scheduling him more, but it's he feels like he has to take on all these, the PGA Junior League and teaching group and individual lessons, where I'm scheduling him 45 hours a week and he's working 60.
Yeah.
It can be hard for him. So trying to find a work-life balance with this, but also bring a inexpensive avenue to the golf course that I think will help elevate our teaching there. So.
Yeah. Teaching the game and letting the community know that you're providing professional instruction is very important. And it can be a big part of the bottom line also. But you're developing, you know, your customers for years to come. So it's important. I mean, you can't quantify all the return on investment necessarily, but it is important. But like I say, it keeps your PGA professionals, you know, they're a PGA professional, you know, you should never forget that you're supposed to play the game competently and you're supposed to teach the game. And those are two of the primary tenets of being a PGA professional. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and it benefits the facility quite a bit in the long term. I mean, people are asking me all the time, who should I go to get lessons, you know? And I said, well, there's all kinds of guys up at Eaglewood that are ready to go, and yet I know that they're super busy and everything, but
That's my hope, is that we can funnel those types of discussions and questions to that if you want to get a good lesson, you're going to go to Eaglewood. And not to say that Brent and Alan aren't good teachers now. I think Alan he's still new in the PGA program and does a good job teaching. I think he can still learn.
They are good teachers. They're highly competent teachers, but it's the time, you know. You have to have time to teach, you know.
And I know some, it may have been Karen that asked me to get some numbers on lessons we're turning down. It's hard to quantify because they're not tracking that for me, and I haven't tracked.
Right.
But I know that Braden, for example, part-time employees, a PGA associate, has taught a significant amount of lessons this year that Alan has either passed on or Brent has passed on, that I think that having a more competent, a more seasoned professional that is a teaching professional taking on those helps elevate Eaglewood even more. So.
Yeah, demand for professional instruction is at an all-time peak right now. So as a good facility, you should capitalize on that. And it can be a good revenue generator too. So.
Yeah.
Well, it needs a system, because my wife went over there and wanted to buy a gift card for me for a lesson and gift card, you know, for the simulator. And they said, well, we don't do that, you know. Mm. So what needs to happen is the lesson methodology. I mean, you call or come in and people know who to refer to or... they're able to just go on the computer and say, okay, he has an opening at 2:00 or 6:00 tomorrow.
And book it online,
Now, I see here we're talking lesson revenue and also a share with the facility. I thought everybody was against that.
That's just an example. The gentleman I talked to on the PGA hiring, he said, he kind of laid it out for me too, which I hadn't really thought about, but he said, if you're hiring a full-time instructor, if you're comparing the two, so one at 0%,
revenue share, and one at 20% revenue share, that depicts on what type of professional you're hiring. So if you're taking 20% of your lesson revenue, you're going to be hiring a $40,000-$50,000 instructor. If you're not taking any, you're going to get kind of a higher end top tier instructor that, oh, this is a good opportunity for me to make a good amount of money. I don't have to charge more, I don't have to work more to make X amount of dollars because I'm sharing revenue with the facilities.
But to get it organized, I mean, the facility is going to have cost. I mean, we're going to have to set up a methodology. Right now, the problem is, like, you know, it took me weeks to get a lesson with Alan because, you know, he comes a long distance, so sometimes he's got to go home and he just doesn't really want to come back. So I said, you know, whenever, I'm in no rush. But, I mean, a person needs to walk in and whoever they talk to, they've got to say, well, here's our instructors and here's their schedules. When do you want to come in?
Yeah,
you
know? So I'm waiting on our new website, but that's a big page of that is our instruction page. It's going to go from one page on Eaglewood right now to have four or five different pages. One section is going to be, here's our instructors, with a headshot of them, with a calendar that's going to be available. So that's
a little biography and a little calendar, and you can book it online. That's
and
great.
And with pricing, so we'll be able to. So you'll be able to do that. Right
now. Okay.
And that, you know, having this person in there, they're going to want that type of.
But don't we need to then get something? I mean, even if we took 5% to cover. I mean, suppose you eventually end up with three more instructors. I mean, I don't know how many you could possibly have, but I mean, if it grows. I mean, there's an administrative cost to that. It seems to me we should get something back.
I think there's more of a cost if we are taking revenue. So it'd be more work on my end to calculate who's paying what, how much percentage we're getting. You know, for me to set up the website with a couple links to the scheduling and paying platform doesn't take me much.
Well, with this, can you just come in and use your credit card to pay for it?
Well, yeah, we'd have to have, they'd have their own separate accounts, which they do right now anyways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Alan and Brent both have their own teaching accounts that's separate from the golf course, and we were running it, I think, my first year here through the pro shop, and that just became so much of a headache that I was having to calculate, okay, here's how many lessons they input this year or this month, and we weren't taking any revenue from them at that time. It was basically we were passing, the city was paying a credit card fee to process stuff.
What type of revenue did Alan and Brent make from teaching lessons? Do you have any ideas?
I would have to go back and look. I don't. Revenue wise, I don't know. I know what Alan's made from PGA Junior League and group clinics, but not from individual lessons.
Okay.
What is the cost of an average lesson with these gentlemen?
I believe Alan's 50 and Brent's 60. Although they've
for
kind
an
of
hour or half an hour.
45 minutes generally lesson. Yeah.
That's on the low end. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. That's on the low end.
So having this person here, I think, will fill that gap where we're at, the higher end gap, I guess.
Yeah, I think there does have to be some return to the city, whether you attribute it to administrative costs or whatever. But even more important, maybe there needs to be some accounting of what they're making so that you at least have an idea of how many lessons are being given. And I mean, it could become a situation where someone is giving so many lessons that you know, they're not delivering a quality lesson. They're just trying to do so much volume and make as much money as they can. And if you don't have any control over it, it seems to me like it could get out of control.
And I think if we were doing the scheduling platform, then we would kind of know through Lightspeed, know how many bookings they've got, and how many lessons.
Yeah.
So that'd just be part of our hiring process of, here's one qualification is we want you to track and know how many lessons you're teaching, what revenue you're making. I mean, I think that's a
And there again, simple. you should receive some kind of, even if it's a small percentage for doing that, scheduling and tracking, I would think. I mean, if you have to set up the platform to do it, I mean, even if it's only 5%, that's 5%. You know, that's 5% is better than zero, right?
Well, right. I mean, the other side of the equation, with the fact that they can do all these junior lessons and so forth, I mean, what do you think the impact would be on additional rounds of golf?
So the number they gave me, and he said, take this with a grain of salt because it's a national number, but for every dollar that someone spends in lessons, the golf course makes $6.50 off of that lesson. So if it's a $50 lesson, you know, they're making six times, they're spending six times that basically at the facility, which
and
to
that's,
me.
And that's merchandise, golf, and food. And
food, yeah. Which to me, if you look at it that way, it's like, okay, you take one $50 lesson, you're probably going to spend $300 on golf or food or mm-hmm. over that time period. Yeah, okay. So
I mean, I guess in that way you are getting a return. And, you know,
yeah,
the thing
yeah.
is, it's getting people to the facility, which is what you want, and some of them will stick.
Yeah, there is a lot of ancillary income, but it's very hard to quantify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plus, the other part of that equation now, the demand is so high, the supply and demand scale is now steeped in demand, and the supply is almost saturated. So,
well, you know. A question on the, I don't know if we've moved on between about independent contractors and part-time employees. Have we moved on with that? Because independent, the independent contractor doesn't seem to work when they're on our golf course, right? The tools of the trade, he'll bring his own clubs. But what about the clubs that others rent for the lessons? Is that going to come through the city? Or does he bring his own set of clubs for people
yeah,
to rent?
Yeah,
you
goes
don't
back
usually
to
rent clubs for your lessons.
Generally not, but those that, you know, right now we even, if somebody comes and hits range balls, mm-hmm. we'll let them take a rental set. We don't charge them to
okay.
do on the driving range. So.
Okay.
And we could change our methodology.
As a part-time, I guess, you know, they have to be under a certain number of hours so that we're not paying them all these benefits. That's
yeah.
where the expense gets out of control.
I just have one, basically one shift a week. So it would be, you know, we have to stay under 29 hours.
Yeah.
They would be anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a week, basically, one
working
shift.
Working for us. And then their lessons are on their own time.
Then they're just teaching on
yes.
their own time.
So we're not paying them a wage to teach.
I see.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's how we.
It's kind of like they're part time on staff, but and then they are kind of an independent contractor as a teacher anyway.
Yeah.
yeah.
I see, and you said you talked with the others. Which of those two works the best?
Well, I got both sides.
Yeah.
So I think there's pros and cons to
yeah.
both, but
where are you leaning?
I would lean towards the part time employee.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
I'd want to.
I would endorse
yeah,
that too.
That is the correct decision.
I think having them being independent would be harder to be, hey, we want to have a staff meeting at 12. Can you come?
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be like your part time employee. We have a staff meeting scheduled at 12.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you then. Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have control and you have some authority over them. If they're completely an independent contractor, they come and go as they please, and you really don't have any control or any authority over what they do on your property, on the facility. So you have to have some,
okay.
yeah, I think you're going to be right on.
And one shift a week is a minimum cost.
yeah, I look at it both ways. It's one way for them to meet some customers and get their name and face in front of the public that comes in. And secondly, I think it helps them feel more like they're part of Eaglewood rather than, I'm an instructor at Eaglewood is different than.
Yeah. I'm an instructor at Eaglewood, but I'm not part of the Eaglewood
mm-hmm.
staff. Now you're
yeah.
you have the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
I would still, and maybe we, I don't know, the best way to even structure a offer to someone that, I'm not too interested in trying to get money from them for teaching. I think it's a minimal amount for us to try to squabble over for lessons.
You're not getting anything from Brett and Allen right now?
No.
So why go down that road?
Yeah. I do think we need some structure on scheduling and payments to figure out
yeah.
that way to make sure that it is minimal effort on our end. It's really handled
yeah.
by
In this market, it's been tried both ways, and usually when you start taking a percentage of teachers' fees, they don't teach as many lessons and they don't have the incentive to excel, I guess is the diplomatic way to put it. They get
yeah.
lazy if you.
And I hope this wouldn't happen, but it would be more likely that someone's taking cash under the table because they don't want to report that revenue.
That's exactly,
yeah.
and then
I
they
mean,
start not reporting and
yeah.
you open
right.
up a different can of worms. So
yeah,
it's
they
hard.
Do it on the side instead of doing it.
Yeah, it's very hard to control that. And you know, if you get a if you get an instructor who's not honest, I mean, they'll start. They won't. I mean, not to use this, this might be a bad example, but it's just like with George and the restaurant staff, you know, a lot of it's based on his honesty and how much income he wants to report. And if he reports, if he gives you false numbers, what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing with him. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to have to police that.
Does it increase the liability for the city with them being part-time?
No.
So you don't have to increase your insurance, or you don't have
to? Well, we may have if we, sorry, I may have misunderstood your question. Yeah, we have to report all hires. So there may be an incremental cost on the insurance, but.
And presumably, because they're PGA professionals, they've been trained on all those other things that you train people in workplaces.
Yeah, I hope they would be, even at 8 hours a week, one of the better pro shop employees. That would be my hope.
Okay.
And that would be one of my qualifying questions is, what capacity have you worked at a golf course, and what's your knowledge of this and that, and understanding of tee sheets, and how, you know, that would be one of my questions for them. Even though they're only going to work one day a week, I want to know, have
and
you worked
some?
You'll
have them be an at-will employee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you'd know pretty quick how good they are, because if they, you know, get the person going to pro shop, buy a glove, do this, all the things, I mean,
sure.
The suggestion from an instructor usually follows through to people actually doing something.
And quite honestly, you can try one method, and if it doesn't succeed, you can always modify that method and try something else, so.
Yeah.
It sounds
Is
like a good start.
Is there a need for women golf pros?
Yeah, I think there's a couple in Salt Lake right now that teach that are on my mind that I think would be a good fit for this.
Mm-hmm.
Good golfers that honestly are good teachers as well. So
mm-hmm.
Both of them are at private facilities, and I'm not sure what their revenue is or what they're making there. We may not be within their
expectations
where they think they can make more at a private course than Eaglewood, but. I'm certainly open to having
You never
that.
Know until you put it out there.
Right.
You know, we have Kelsey on our staff right now that's part-time, that's getting into the PGA program, that she's helped with our ladies group clinics and junior golf camps that I think have helped. Just having that perspective and that presence there has helped a lot with, especially our ladies clinics.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, speaking from that perspective, having had golf lessons from males and females, I've always enjoyed having my lessons with women.
Mm-hmm.
That's human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to build a ladies program, that sort of thing, I know the men's is doing better than the ladies. That's another consideration.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it may be that we grow this so much that we need, like you mentioned, or two or three. Or
exactly.
May need one of each.
I hope
mm-hmm.
that we can.
Yeah.
And that my hope is if we have a really good facility that's teaching, then we can kind of grow from there. So.
Yeah.
Top left is just kind of my timeline. I'll work the next few weeks on getting a job posting ready to go out on the PGA website. Hoping at end of October, leave it open for three and a half weeks, and then it's doing some interviews in December for probably a February hire to kind of get them onboarded. And depending on the person, they may already be teaching somewhere or doing something in the winter, give them time to kind of acclimate over to Eaglewood. So, any objections or thoughts? Or
is that giving enough time?
Yeah, the PGA hiring professional over our section has given me a good outline already. Him and I have kind of been emailing back and forth on
mm-hmm.
what to include in there. Some of it I'll have to work on with our scheduling and other qualifications we'll need with part-time and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, but for
I
the most part
you're on the right track.
Way.
Yeah.
Do you want a recommendation from the committee, or
I think that would probably be good.
I'll recommend that you follow through on the on this outline for hiring an instructor.
Second.
All right,
all in favor? Aye.
Tim, aye.
Thank you.
Some of you may have saw a little section there, and I'll try to skip through this. From our city council meeting, I've received and I've ordered to Ken just a preliminary workup from Gateway Parks, same group that's doing Spanish Fork City and their golf course. This is a platform there, and then the tubing hills that kind of come down, landing in the fairway area. Initially, they've offered a 5% revenue share. There still needs to be some discussions before we take to City Council, hopefully mid-next year, on how the food and beverage operations are going to work, how power and water access and payments will work from them. They're obviously paying for the power and water that they use, but having meters and where they're pulling water from and things like that still need to be.
So that proposal is for coming down number 9 there?
Yeah, so I've got a few
down
other creatures
the side
here.
Hill of the driving
ones.
Range to number 9?
Yeah, so if you, here's the clubhouse.
That makes total sense.
Driving range.
I didn't understand that either when we talked. That's a natural location.
So it still leaves a couple things. So I follow the Spanish Fork City workup and contract negotiations with this group and them. One of the main concerns from citizens were that it was free to sled on the hill, and now they're charging. They are still offering in Spanish Fork an area for free sledding and snowboard and skiing instruction. Here, I don't think we impact the free sledders at all,
right? Yeah.
Because they're on this
upper
hill.
Over on the other part of the first hole.
So it still leaves us open to have those that want to come up and not pay. I don't think it takes anything away from the public, and actually probably adds to those that want to come up and sled for free, because they'll have, you know, either the cafe will be open or they'll have some structures there. They'll be selling hot chocolate and donuts and things like that. But I think the city has wanted for probably many years more of an operation up there, and I think the golf course not doing it, handing over this, eliminates a lot of the liability I think that was a big concern previously. So their projections, I did the math here, year one they're looking at just a little over $1 million in revenue from ticket sales and season passes, 5% of that, so $50,000. So they kind of told us we'd be looking at 100. So this may not include what they estimate they're going to make off of food and beverage. But again, I think there's some negotiation there on whether we want to be open 9 to 9 and we want to take on some of the hot chocolate, lunch, and food sales there. I think it gives a couple good opportunities for the golf course operations. One is they have a lot of corporate events that will come in and do a lot of the tubing, and it opens it up for us to be able, like, well, if you're going to have an event here, why don't you come buy a box lunch from the grill and you can sit in the event center. So some of those days we don't have, you know, all day events, we can sell some food and event space for these groups to come and tube and eat and meet together. So I think it's a partnership that I think would benefit both parties. And
the white portion, is that a fiber, is that just showing where snow would be, or is that a fiberglass?
Yeah, I'm not sure why their rendering is so high. I'm not sure if they need it that high. I mean, that's about
do they have a catch basin wall at the bottom of the hill like they used to at Gorgoza?
I think that's what that's representing.
College Hill and Logan, sand bells.
So Tyler, is it lit at night when it's dark?
Yeah, so they have lights. Huh? They run power off of their operations is from 9 to 9.
So do they put up temporary light standards?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a catch basin at the end?
Yes.
Some sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good safety thing. My initial reaction is 5% is way too low.
That seems low to me too.
That's virtually
nothing. I think if we're doing a lot of food and beverage, I think we make up a good chunk of money from us being able to sell hot chocolate and donuts or whatever. I think if we're handing that over to them, then I think there needs to be negotiation. They actually partnered with Spanish Fork City this year at 3% is the number that they landed on.
What's the name of this company?
Gateway Parks.
Okay.
And I'll be pretty close eye on how that goes down there. They're going to be November 15th starting to throw snow, so I'm going to go down probably that week and just see how they're
3%.
Do they set up snowmaking machines there?
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there was a feature in the news on this a few days ago. Yeah, looked pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think Spanish Fork's excited about it.
I'm really surprised, though, that they would do it for 3%. I mean,
Well, I think that's their first year.
You're donating the property, though.
They wanted them pretty bad if they settled for 3%.
Well, I think it's the first year, and that's what they initially told us, is your first year is at 3 and then up to 5 after that, the second through 10th year. But their proposal, they included 5 in the first year, so I'm going to kind of hold them to that.
I think that's so exciting.
Yeah. So I don't see many downsides for at least the city operations.
So do they put in a tube carrier that? So
yeah. So it's this. You can kind of see it here. It's a, okay. They call it their magic carpet, but it's basically a.
So the kids aren't carrying stuff up and down. You just ride down and then walk up.
Kind of like ride a
escalator,
like a
basically.
Rope.
Oh, you ride yourself up?
Yeah.
On the tube?
No, you can stand. Yeah, they call
it a
magic carpet, but it's basically
like the tow rope.
Conveyor belt.
Oh, so it's super easy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
even old guys can do it.
Yeah.
Well,
you don't have to walk.
It's a lot bigger structure than I have. A couple, only really big concern I have is the impact on the grass down here.
Sure.
How we come out of season and how we get it melted off for golf to be open.
But the main slope is off the side of the driving range, right?
Yeah, we'll have to cut down a couple trees, which two of them are cottonwood trees that are dead anyways, and one other one's covered in Virginia creeper, so.
Do you think there would be any pushback from the neighbors if it's lighted at night?
I had a concern, but up until, I think as long as 9 o'clock's their latest, I think that's plenty early enough to, and depending on how the lights are showing, I mean, hopefully they're not in the Harrison's backyard, but.
I think you'll learn from Spanish, or I guess being in my industry, I know we've had problems with neighbors with apartment buildings that were next door or across the street from us because of the kids yelling and go-karts. Anyway, but
okay.
So I just be careful because...
That may be a...
Because those neighbors are expensive homes and they were there first and they... You might want to listen to that when you're at Spanish Fork.
So Gateway Parks obviously insures everything and provides all the liability insurance. You're completely indemnified from any responsibility.
Yep.
And they provide all staffing.
Yep. Which is kind of a, they said we'll take any of your part-time seasonal staff that you have working and just keep them right on going with Gateway Parks, kind of hire them on for their staff.
Well,
I noticed in the minutes from the last meeting, or whenever it was, somebody mentioned the idea of when you're shooting shags, have the lights on at night, like extend the hours. And I thought immediately, those people that are living across, you know, they're not going to like that at all.
Nope.
Yeah, driving
range,
I think,
is different. This seems to me like a different level of lighting that would be required. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. You know, if we were doing it off of the, number one T end, I think it does a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there'll be any more than the parking lot lights that we have in the parking lot anyways right now that are on all night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're kind of down and
away
from
the
hill's
going east to west.
Yeah.
And if it were running parallel to number one fairway, I think you might have some problems.
If they had,
but you'll still have lights at the top.
Yeah, so
those people
I think they'll have probably some lights going down.
Yeah.
Either side here, probably at the top. If they had set up over in this area, I would say probably a little more concern. But having it off and over by the clubhouse that's lit anyways, I think will be fine.
In a way, it's sort of a pilot project, right? We're going to try this for a year and see.
Yeah.
We'll learn a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully, if it's a terrible experience for Spanish Fork City, we won't have to get into it at all.
That's right.
We won't have to try, but if it's good and they have a good experience, then...
And Gateway Parks just kind of builds everything, and it's all temporary stuff, and then they...
So they said they'd start kind of mid-October with the main structure, and then November 15th, they'd start throwing snow. So.
We are going to be the party city of northern Utah.
I hope so.
It'd be awesome.
And not that this is forcing a policy decision, but they've made it clear that they're looking for a area near Salt Lake. So if they don't come here, they're going to find somewhere else to go. So if it's a good opportunity for us, then I think it's something good we can partner with. So
much of the headache is removed for you. on this, which is there existing every year already. So, I mean, this is just, to me, this is just exciting.
It would be great if it would translate into a lot of customers at the grill.
Yeah.
Like, people get cold, they go in and have a meal, sit down and get warm.
Yeah.
You know.
Even if we did $80,000 in hot chalk, I mean, hot chalk.
It's kind of like golfers being just the...
Yeah, I'd campaign with them for Eaglewood to have all the concessions if possible.
From what I understand, reading there...
That's where you make, F&B is going to be your, where you recover the low percentage that they're paying to use your property, which...
And it sounds like they're contracting with other people to provide the food. They're not, Gateway's not actually doing it. So it may be that, hey, we'll take 100% of the food and X percentage of your revenue to justify it.
Our chef is Jared.
Justin Fields.
Okay. Is he on board with this?
Him and I have had preliminary discussions, but that's one concern he had is who's doing food and how and when.
So I think our contract
before you came, we had a discussion about the restaurant and grill are basically going to be open during the winter anyway, especially Thursday, Friday, Saturday for meals. So.
Okay.
Yeah, and if it becomes a, you know, if they're open 9 to 9 and the grill's got to be open, and I think that gives us opportunity to look at having that second full-time employee to make sure we are staffed 9 to 9.
It certainly would justify that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the blue-collar Sun Valley experience. Yeah. We're not going to be ice skating, but we're going to be having some fun in the snow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's going to bring a whole
lot of money. Well, why not? Let's put in the ice skating rink where the pond is. Come on. We could have hockey leagues.
It would probably appeal to a whole different segment of our
it
population.
Would.
Plus, it'll bring people from all the towns too.
It will.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
sorry, Court.
It does not change over the winter.
Back.
Oh, okay.
So I've got 20 minutes.
More. Okay. I just wanted to bring this to you again.
Park City operation. Oh, it's unbelievable.
This is
money's no object.
What I brought to you probably a couple, three months ago, on renovating that simulator space downstairs. I've talked to University of Utah coach on their putt view system. I would probably scratch that from our cost. I think I'd probably look at more doing just a smaller putting green, a cheaper option that's a couple $1,000.
Just doing an indoor thing yourself.
Just doing an indoor thing ourselves. So I'm looking around $40,000 to kind of renovate the space and get it more of a lounge area, which I think will impact not only the simulators, but also the events, kind of upselling them on having that extra space downstairs to
Yeah, that bigger up. Lounge area will pay for itself
in
1 year.
So I've had discussions with both Orp Insurance a few months ago, just kind of giving them a heads up that we're potentially looking at this. My hope would be that the golf committee would support me kind of moving forward with this and kind of notifying them that spring will end their tenancy at the golf course and will begin some demolition. Kind of once the simulator memberships die off.
What do they pay per month once again?
So they're at, I believe it's $650 a month. Might be $700. Yeah.
So we're giving them the space for free anyway.
It might even be lower than that now that I think about it. But yeah, somewhere around that range that you know, one event in a month would pay more than what we're making on that.
Right. Yeah.
And I think our return on $40,000 so that event space comes pretty quick. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. And if you did put in the putt view, that's another $32,000. So it almost doubles the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say use the space for more for lounge.
Yeah. He University of Utah coach, the gentleman I talked to, he might have been an assistant. He said it's really nice. It's informative.
But
yeah. You know, that's not what they're ultimately using more of. It's fun on the games, but it's not really a teaching and training tool as much as they thought it would be. So,
yeah.
And I think for what we're using it for, I don't want to have somebody down there training everybody to how to use it.
Right.
Or how it's operating or troubleshooting it now. I think just having a nice putting area.
Yeah,
you know,
if you
even
just
if we,
have a putting area. And
even if we just had this with four cups in it and allow someone to putt. And
like they do most of the golf scores.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
People putt all day long. They have to try out those putters.
Yeah. And having some of this, you know, the shuffleboard and, like we've talked about before, some games and things like that down there would elevate that experience.
So if I understand correctly, a motion would be that we utilize that area informally as a putting area where we don't use a electronic system, we set it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And use it in that lobbying area.
Yeah, so have it that whole space downstairs, which is about double, almost three times the size of what our current simulator space is. It's more of a lounge, lounge area with a putting, you know, mm-hmm. couch, a TV, more of a fun space than
pinballs.
Pinballs, yeah. Some arcades.
Pinballs maybe set up, well, like you said, maybe a little bar. Cool. Not necessarily alcoholic
yeah.
beverages, but a
you can rent the whole thing out for parties.
A food and beverage area. You know, oh, great for parties. I mean,
yeah.
You're going to have guys doing their bachelor parties down there. And quite honestly, I mean, wedding parties like to come in a little early maybe, and while everyone's getting ready, you can go down. And
yeah, it is funny that we've had some groups that have had some alcohol have gone downstairs in the storage room to party, and that is not a place you'd want to go party. And that's the space we're looking at renovating. Right now it's full of junk and paint and
Black Widows.
Yeah, it's not.
It's like the worst basement you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's a drop ceiling, goes down to 8 feet. Like, it's just, but people have gone down there to be like, I need to get away from the party and I want to, yeah. So I think it would be a good amenity for
that. Yeah, that's a great idea, especially for the cost. I mean, that cost will be recovered so quickly.
And I'm, you know, without a fee proposal, I think I would probably charge someone $750 to $1,000 more on top of their event rental to be able to utilize that space, which I think is probably fair.
So does everybody want to second that motion?
Yes.
I'll second that motion. What was the formal motion?
The formal motion was to turn the space into a game room, basically.
Golf simulator expansion.
Yeah.
Okay. I second that motion.
Perfect.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. So I have some pretty informal bids from all these contractors from electrical, HVAC, but I'll kind of get some more finite prices from them. I think once we demo and I can get them in there, but I'll have some pretty formal pricing on exactly what we need before we start tearing down walls. So. And then we have just an email kind of chain, have gone back and forth between Ken and I and Lisa and Mayor Horrocks on Lynn Larson, their hole by hole number 17. So Ken wanted just to touch on this. This is more background and information on what we're doing and why we're doing it. But if you remember back when we initially got the bond, even before we were in a drought sensitive time in 2022, discussion was let's cut out some of these areas, and preemptively, luckily we did, not water some of the exterior out of range spaces on the golf course that have been watered for several years. So we put $150,000 into new controllers and $40,000 into part circle heads to help us cut off basically that 360 area into 180 degree area. Reintroduced a lot of native grass areas, and interestingly enough, I found out from Weston that a lot of the surrounding areas around the golf course were planted as native grass originally in 1994. Mm. And I didn't know this without looking at it, but he said you can go out there and see the different types of grass between what's on the native side and what's even on the fairways. So we kind of took Eaglewood back to where I think the initial intent of having some of those native grasses around those areas. And you can see it more areas than you can others, where we don't have nearly as many houses or exteriors. But 2022 kind of pushed us more towards those water savings. And then obviously with doing a lot of these things, we're saving on water, we're saving on equipment, and as well as employees. We are still cutting along the exterior perimeter of the golf course, so along property lines, as well as along sidewalks and cart paths. So we still are maintaining some areas so there's not overgrowth outside the golf course or onto the golf course. These are images I took off of Google Earth to give you just an idea of where we've been and where we're going. So this one on the left is June of 2021. So this is kind of before we made any alterations, changes to some areas on the golf course. This was when we were really dry last June, or July, excuse me. And then this is this current July, 2023. So the area that Lynn Larson, this is his home right here. Last year, this was pretty dormant grass. Pretty, you know, we didn't, if you get any motorized vehicles on dormant grass, it basically turns to dirt.
Right.
So you, we, if we're not watering those areas, we don't want equipment back and forth, traction, creating those areas. So, you know, along number 10, we even had watering up until I think Liberty Fest, and we started watering that a little more. But you can see along the peripheral here, a lot of water areas that we've cut out. I wish I could maybe zoom in on this. 16 is a great example. Let's see if I can.
So are the neighbors complaining about that?
Yeah, so Lynn has complained that we're detracting from the beauty of the golf course and his property values by not mowing this section of the golf course.
That's a totally subjective
point of view. Me personally, in Weston, I think we really like how it looks.
I was going to say.
I actually like it.
I like it too.
I like the tall, wispy grass.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. Now there are areas there that have turned to dirt because we've had some motorcycles and bikes and things go through, and Westernized plan is to replant those dirt areas.
Well, they turned to dirt during the drought, though.
Especially on the other side of the green, you can see those dirt.
Yeah, on the back side of 17
green. So that's kind of more up in here behind 17.
I don't think that area looks good.
It doesn't, but it's been vandalized, too.
Yeah, it's been.
You talk this area behind 17?
Yeah. Behind 17
yeah.
green, yeah.
So that's where we've had
as you drive down Eaglewood Drive.
Yeah. So that's where we had the bikers and carts and driving through when it was dormant, you know, in 2022, most of the damage.
Is there another option other than, you don't want to replant it with normal grass, but is there another option other than plant it with native grasses?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at, some native grass seed and some native flowers.
Is there another option, though? Because, you know, when the native grass grows up like that, you know, it looks like Shinnecock Hills and those places. Quite honestly, it looks old-fashioned and it does look unkept. If you're trying to generate more of a country club look, I don't think that's the thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer.
I have a different perspective, with all due respect. I think what looked, when I saw it, it looked like there was about this much grass.
Mm-hmm.
And when Lynn Larson called me, he made it sound like it was a pile of weeds.
Right.
So terrible, it's weeds, blah, blah, blah. I went there and I said, this looks great. And it has a natural feel to it, and it doesn't require maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, in those areas we've cut 100% of the water, and you know we were spending easily 10 hours a week with Deb, our maintenance, mowing native grass, and now we've cut it down to 10 hours.
Yeah, that's
10
the problem with
month.
Native grass.
Well,
if you try to mow it, it's tough.
I thought he was complaining because it came. I mean, there's a very clear distinction between his property and and his property looks great. And frankly, it looks like the golf course, which. So
well, no, a lot of it behind 17 green is turned to dirt.
I'm supportive of what you're doing.
Yeah, we're mowing that property line. What was mowed between his property and the golf course, and the cart path and the sidewalk, we did. What he had done was made a couple passes in a native grass, which I thought actually made it look worse.
Oh, he did. I didn't realize he had done that. But he said to me that he had mowed next to the sidewalk. He had done that, and then it got bigger and bigger. And he was thrilled with that because it turned back into grass. But my sense for him is that he says, I own the golf course because I'm a taxpayer.
I hear that a lot, actually.
He says, and I turned to him, I says, well, I own the golf course because I'm a taxpayer. You know, I mean, that's such a foolish argument.
Yeah. I made it clear he should stay off the golf course. So.
Me too.
Yeah.
I thought you were very delicate, actually.
Yeah.
You don't
trespass. I just explained. You know.
I know. I thought you were.
How about I go onto your backyard and cut your yard?
No, I thought you were.
Yeah, I'm just a good letter.
So he came on the golf course property and cut native grass there on the golf course property?
And trees. He trimmed trees. He's trimmed trees.
Well, that's
with the drought situation, I don't think it hit. I mean, I know Len personally. Sorry, buddy.
Next time you talk to him, you can help him understand.
Well, the answer is I will. I mean, I will. But the reality is, I mean, I wouldn't argue over, because again, I think whether it's better or looks better or looks worse is totally subjective.
It is.
I personally think it looks great.
Yeah, me too.
But that beside the point, the drought is real. Mm-hmm. It ain't going away anytime soon. And just because we had one good year doesn't solve our problem going forward.
Well, Lynn said we don't have to wear water anymore.
Right.
Well, he said the city has free water, yeah.
So that's the argument I make is, frankly, we don't have control over it, Lynn. I mean, it's being dictated by the state and by other people, and we're sorry. And we think it looks pretty good.
Yeah, the runoff just alone.
Plus, as long as he takes care of his own property, his property value will stay right where it is.
It's not going to take away from his property bed.
Yeah, all of those areas. He should come. He's mowing it. So at the end of the year, we mow all of the native down. Uh-huh. A couple reasons. One is to help with the vermin that like to nest in there during the winter.
Uh-huh.
And two, it helps with regrowth in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But we're mowing all of it right now. But you should come watch him on. I'm going to take a video on some of these side hills that he's mowing. He mowed on a driving range today by in between the driving range and number one. It probably took him 5-6 hours to mow one little segment there, which we were doing every month, twice a month.
He also said, you know, you've got like the marker that comes up. He says, I mow around that so it's really nice. And I'm like, city staff was doing that.
Yeah.
Sure you are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not good enough.
Well, probably not. But. Anyway.
Sorry.
You're always going to have a complainer.
We do. We have lots of them.
Oh, yeah.
I read all the emails. I thought the responses everybody made were really good, and I don't think it was emphasized enough that we're still in a drought and that some of these things just have to be done. But that brings up the thing. I mean, we've got a bunch of other golf course infringements apparently too that were talked about some months ago. Are we doing anything about those?
Yeah, I think our plan is first of the year before the golf course opens to kind of send that letter out. I just got delivered a bunch of more trespassing notification signs and more posts. We're going to try.
We thought we weren't quite ready to send that letter out because the course needs some signage and some other things. So so we haven't given up on that letter.
You thought it wasn't marked appropriately?
It's just not since I talked to him.
We just thought we'd send the letter when we were a little bit better prepared. So so we'll get the course fixed up for spring, and we'll hit it hard in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have the winter to walk the golf course. Thank you.
Yes, once the snow starts, you're trade.
Well, once the snow falls, you're okay anyway. Mm-hmm. It's only when golfers are golfing. We don't want somebody to kill you, you know?
I get it. I've changed my walk manner.
Just set an example. You're on the committee.
I get it.
You're in the big game now, so yeah.
After our last discussion, I went for a walk with my wife, and Tyler showed up with that very night in the cart, and I felt so bad. And actually, we were just walking on the golf course down along
10.
Yeah. Right when it was sort of. Anyway,
so Tyler texted me that day.
I had to apologize. I felt so terrible. He had his daughter with him. I'm like, oh crap.
did Tyler handcuff you and tase you?
No, he didn't have to. It's like, I mean, Court, I'm so disappointed. I get it. I'm sorry. That'll never happen again.
I mean, I'm disappointed speeches about that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dad.
That's cute.
That's great.
Well, that's all I had.
Anybody in the committee have anything else? I mean, it's been a great turnaround, and facility looks great. Everybody that comes here with me to play says what a nice course, and you know, they now mentioned the clubhouse definitely because it really does look good. And so, I mean, we're in good shape. We just keep moving. And
everything's off and running in a positive direction.
There's way more blue sky.
Yep.
There's more blue sky to be had.
Yeah.
So. Thank you, Tyler.
If we haven't said this before, one thing I would say, I've said this to some of you, Tyler and I are going to work on this long-range plan over the winter. So the committee will have some idea of a projection and a plan that you've been asking for, so.
Yeah, because it'd be nice to know how all these things fit in, because even the restaurant, I mean, it's really a grill, not a restaurant, because it wasn't built big enough. But, I mean, I look at that and say, well, you know, maybe we should close in that deck area and make it a restaurant. You know, I mean, it's in an area here where if it were catered at night, I mean, you could fill it up 7 nights a week with the people that live up in this area. Because, you know, how many decent restaurants are there from here if you don't go down to Salt Lake?
Zero.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, I mean, to me, to drive all the way down to Salt Lake, I'd say, you know, if it was here and I could come over and I'll make the reservation, pay for it in advance, and, you know, the kitchen only has to make what they're going to sell, and, you know, have specials of, you know, today's...
That's why that Sunday brunch idea is so exciting in the winter.
Saturday,
I mean, I think people will really
like
go
that.
For
I mean, it's just a big area up here with demand that isn't being met, so.
Are you going to have a Santa Claus event this year?
Yeah, December 23rd.
Okay.
I believe that's a Saturday.
Okay.
So the Santa's already hired, and him and Mrs. Claus.
Wonderful.
So we'll do a breakfast.
Well,
we'll
wait
do
a minute. Mrs. Claus
scenes.
Is coming too.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. How about the elves? Are they coming?
We might have Alan dress up, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
No, but yeah, so we're going to do two sessions of breakfast, probably. I have to look at. I think a 9 and 11.
So great! It's so great, Tyler. You're doing so many wonderful things.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, I've got some inside information. Now, when we were looking on whether or not we're going to work with, was it Great Harvest, Great West? What was the name?
Great Life.
Great Life, Utah.
I have some inside information, and it's not going well for them. Just so you know, we made a really great decision with you.
I think they've overextended a little bit on what they thought that they could do, and.
It's costing the city. It's costing the city money that it doesn't have.
Well,
so
it was eventually.
What city are you talking about?
Farron.
Yeah. So.
Farron.
Farron City.
Jeff Harbertson has broken ties with Great Life now, so he's done.
Thought he was Great Life.
He was.
How recent was this?
They split ways this summer.
Well, it was.
I don't know about Farron, but
it was eventually determined that they were undercapitalized, and when that came to the fore, I think it was a pretty easy decision after that, wasn't it?
Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for all your input.
Thank you for listening.
Couldn't have done it without you guys.
Well, I move that we adjourn this meeting.
Second.
All in favor. All in favor. Let's leave.
Thank you, dude.
Thanks, Court.
I'm sorry I was late. My work day gets gone crazy.
Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
I'm glad I made it.
See you as always.
You too.
All right.